welcome to Kinfolk War.
With season two of The Witcher behind us, we're here today to reflect on some of the differences between the show and the books and speculate about where the story will be going in the future. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra, and uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country. You can also go and check out season one and now season two in your podcast feeds of The Witcher.
Today, we will discuss all the highs and lows of being a fan of this show. And we've brought on a special guest, our kinfolk lore resident Witcher expert. We will be discussing some spoilers from the book Blood of Elves. So if that's not your thing, you should probably skip this episode.
Also, kinfolk lore will have adult content, sans unicorns, just like,
wah, wah.
You know, Lauren, get it together. Get your whole life. I don't understand what happened to the unicorns, and neither does some of our friends on the internet. But we will have it. There will be adult content. Let's go. As we said, this is a special episode, and we're going to wrap up the events of what we've seen so far in the show, dip into the books a little bit. So again, there will be spoilers and a little bit about games, but we want to welcome to the show Kinfolk Lore contributor, our dear friend Sloan. Welcome to the pod.
Woo woo!
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
It's exciting.
We're excited to have you.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's kick it off. Let's kick off with what got you into this world? Like, how did you get into The Witcher?
Yeah. So I'm terrible at video games, but I'm a avowed video game spectator. So my husband is great at video games and loves playing them. And so he played the game when I was in law school. So this must have been 10 years ago. And we played through the whole thing and I got really into the story. And for those of you who've played the game, the voice acting is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the narrative is really quite propulsive. And I was like, oh, there's books I can read and learn more about this. So I sort of started out trying to figure out how Witcher 3 ties into the books, which was a confusing way in, but ended up reading the whole series and really loving it. And then when we found out the show was going to be a thing, was like, oh, I'm super nervous about whether this is going to be good or be really, really corny, but it's been really great so far. And I'm super, super psyched that the show is around.
Well, I mean, according to season one, you probably did it the right way because all the timeline disjointness, you went Witcher 3, then you went to the beginning, the short stories. You're like, hey, what's going on? That's how I went into it. And I was completely confused. I was like, what? And then you helped me out. So I appreciate it.
Turns out there's lots of ways in. It doesn't have to be linear, but it's been really interesting to sort of see the world from a bunch of different entry points now, and to talk to people about the show and the books and the game who've kind of come in from one angle or another about how do they latch into the world.
I probably wouldn't have read the books if you hadn't encouraged me to. I was really enjoying the show and the game, but I just needed more. So the Blood of Elves is great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm so glad we get to have this discussion having all read Blood of Elves now, which is going to be, because I think when we originally thought about doing this, it was going to be a little bit of a different discussion if we didn't all have that jumping off point. So psyched that we do.
Yeah, and so let's start there. How different, right, was this season two, which is largely based on Blood of Elves? How different do you feel like this was from the books?
Yeah, so it's kind of amazing how much is the same, right? And I would say, sort of for starters, this season is more different from the books than the first season was. Mm-hmm. The first season, as we covered on the website, very, very similar to what's happening in that first slug of short stories. And this season diverges a lot more from the plot of what's in Blood of Elves. But it's really amazing how much really is the same. And there's some big plot changes, but the texture of what we see and what the world looks like and what it feels like feels, to me at least, incredibly true to what's in the books and in the games. And you see this particularly in the locations. You know, Kaer Morhen looks incredible. Oxenfurt looks amazing. The world feels really richly realized and very true to what the descriptions in the books are like. But it's always hard when you're adapting something, you're writing against people's adaptations. So there's some things that we'll talk about that felt really different and kind of harshly so to me, but I know that didn't bug other people as much. And then some things that have made a lot of people on the internet very upset. That didn't bother me at all.
let's not even hold back. I mean, we're not, I mean, we talked about it previous episode. We were like, yo, what's up with how Yen is getting treated? I'm not a fan. Like, I'm not a fan of the Yen storyline. Like, I know that you mentioned and offline, we've all talked about how it ties into like some of the ways that we were kind of jarred with the way they handled Will and his Dark Materials, but it's even deeper for me. Like, I don't know. Like, I was not as bothered about the Will situation. I could understand it, but I feel terrible about them making Yen's motivation so clouded. It feels weird.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a lot about Yen, which is a huge difference from the books to the show and probably the biggest source of changes. And I'm really glad you brought up Will, because I think this story is a really great contrast to his Dark Materials in terms of what made the adaptation successful, and then also some things that drove people nuts, right? So his Dark Materials, I think the book readers were like, the world feels wrong, but the plot was the same. Mm-hmm. This world feels mm-hmm. right, but there's some plot stuff that's weird. And I think the stuff with Yen kind of stems from this, the sort of Will Perry issue about if you have a character who is a major part of the story, but doesn't appear until later in the books, you know, Lauren Hissrich, the showrunner, has clearly decided it wasn't going to work to have her just not be around at the beginning.
Why? And to have Ciri Bran not had be the around. Greatest story. Bran had the greatest story, and he disappeared for a whole season. So why? Why would this not work?
I don't know. And you know, we've talked about this some offline. I mentioned it in the article. You know, the whole thing about Yen's backstory in the first season, the one conversation she and Geralt have about her like magical education, she literally says, please don't ask me what it was like. Like, that's the line, right? And then we somehow got episode 3 of season 1 out of that, right? Which is wild. So we're clearly going to get about both Yen and Ciri and potentially later on with Geralt, a whole lot of story that comes kind of out of nowhere because she's just decided everybody needs something to do in every episode. We'll talk a little more about whether those stories are successful or not, but that's kind of the source of the biggest changes that we see, you know, with Yen and Ciri in particular.
So you mentioned already that the show gives a lot of characters something to do in basically every episode. And for me, that was one of the criticisms I had, that there, especially in like episodes, I think 4 and 5, there's just a lot of plot packed in because we're kind of checking in across various plot lines. Are there any that you would have, if you were the head writer for the show, that you would have either removed or eliminated or minimized a bit more?
We're going to talk about this, I think, in more detail, but if we ran the world, we would have gone with a storyline for what happens to Yen after Sodden that's a little closer mm-hmm. to what is in the books. Mm-hmm. Which would have left her out of, you know, some significant chunk of the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. which much as I love Yen and anybody who's talked to me for more than 5 minutes knows that's a lot, mm-hmm. it would have been okay. And I would have in some ways kind of preferred that to what happened.
This is coming from a huge Yen fan. This is like literally like it, the, like, you know, our DMs are like Yen. No, it's the same.
Right. So, no, I mean, my husband bought me a like 20-inch tall like statuette of her for Christmas. Like, I love this character, but awesome. I would have preferred, you know, that she be around less than see some of the things that we saw.
Yeah.
So should we talk a little bit about kind of what happens to her during this time in the books? Would that help?
Yeah, let's go for it. I think that this is a great time to do it.
Yeah. So she, her post-Sodden plot line on the show is almost a complete reversal from what's in the books. So in the books, we don't have nearly as much detail about what happens at Sodden. So we get a really cool looking battle that is largely kind of show only. Mm. But Yen is blinded in the battle. And she eventually recovers her sight at Arethusa, and Tisaya and some of those characters are involved in her healing, but that all happens kind of off page. She makes a comment at one point to Yaskier about, you know, oh, for a long time, I didn't see anybody. And what she means is literally she didn't see them because she was blind. But she was sort of healing. And then if you've read through Time of Contempt, which is the next book, we learn that she was sufficiently acclaimed for her heroism that she's actually made a member of the High Council after the battle. So far from kind of being shunned and distrusted, she's actually, you know, made a member of the High Council, and she has significant authority at this point. And
so
then
why do you think that they're pivoting in that kind of way then? Like, so what is it about? Like, I mean, I know you can't answer this, but that's what bothers me. It's like, it's not only so far away from the book, which, you know, shows do that. It's also like a huge deviation in a lot of the characters' motivations at, you know, at their essence, like who they are as a person and who they are in the world.
Yeah. And I, you know, you and I have talked a lot offline about, does the showrunner kind of want to make Yen a little bit the bad guy, mm-hmm. And a little bit kind of more complicated than she is, which I think folks who have played the game or read the books, like, she's got plenty of dark side already. I don't think we needed mm-hmm. a lot more, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. This plot line about her kind of being mistrusted, I kind of wonder if this comes out of a bit of The Lady of the Lake, which is the last book, mm-hmm. Where she does get imprisoned for some time, and then there's some question about her motivations when she comes back. But it's a very different story mm-hmm. than what we get here. So what we get again in Blood of Elves is she's sort of healing for a while, and then Triss is helping Geralt with Ciri and is like, I got nothing. I'm totally out of my depth here. Right. And we can talk about being out on Triss later. That's kind of the issue. But
Andrew's like making like a face. She's like, yo, I'm out. She's out on Triss.
Yes, this is an out on Triss podcast at this point. You know, Triss tells her, like, hey, I know you don't want to talk to Yen because it's hard between you, but like, you really need to. And you guys talked about the letter, which was the biggest tease ever, that they named episode 6 Dear Friend and then yeah. didn't include the letter. Like, that, I still have problems with that.
Based on the fact that you told us about the letter, like, that was like, I knew that I was wondering why they didn't. And this is the same episode. This is the same episode in which the unicorn is only mentioned. I mean, that's it.
Yes.
That's all we get, is a
right.
slight little mention of this unicorn. That's it.
We get this total tease of like two really great moments with them in the
yeah.
books.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, Yen meets Ciri at Ellender and trains her. And then the back half of the book is really about their training. Mm-hmm. And some of it is quite like heartwarming and touching about what their relationship is like. And we see the development of that sort of side of the family. And some of it's just really funny. But both of those things would have added, I think, you know, more warmth and depth to Yen. And, you know, we had the, no, I'm not crying, you're crying discussion when, you know, she calls Ciri daughter in the books and Ciri mm-hmm. calls her mom. Mm-hmm. And there's really kind of overt development of, again, that really warm maternal bond between them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really missed that. It's like a bummer to me that we didn't get to see that in the books, but that's what the source material gives us. And then we get this, you know, quite different story about her losing her magic and this plotline with the Deathless Mother, which is a total show only, you know, invention for this season.
Yes, Ciri, yes.
Yeah. So
it was actually,
you know,
yes, Yen.
I know, it's actually yes, Yen. I know, but it's really.
So we've kind of talked about the why does this matter question, right? And I don't think it's just that I'm like Yen and Geralt shipping trash, and I'm like mad that it didn't turn out the way I wanted to. Although we'll talk about their relationship and why, you know, how the show portrays it and how that's different. But there's kind of three issues. One is like, I loved the story that's in the book and I wish we could have mm-hmm. seen it. And I hope we will next season or some portions of it. There's also a kind of issue about, is the storytelling that we get instead coherent, right? And you guys talked about this some in the previous episodes, is kind of, do her actions make sense here? And then the last question is kind of, why bother, right? Mm-hmm. It's not clear to me that the choice she's made here helps the story, right? What does adding animosity and making Yen and Geralt's relationship harder do, right? How does that help us? Why not have her be blinded? Why go in this other direction? And given how different it is and how different the emotional relationship between Yen and Ciri appears to be on the show so far, I don't really quite know why we went in this direction.
That's the thing I struggle with, I think, the most is just I don't see the changes to yen as strongly as you do, in part because I'm newer to the story. I'm not as attached to her overall narrative. I still love yen, betray people or not. I'm still going to stand her. It is what it is. But I guess my problem with it really just stems from why is the show so committed to not showing us any moment where there's any harmony between Yen and Geralt? It's just this constant struggle. And we know those moments are happening, right? They're alluded to in dialogue, but we never get to see them. All we really get to see is tension. And then I just don't know how I feel about introducing Yen to Ciri in a way that Ciri isn't going to trust her off the bat. Like, Ciri is suspicious of Yen in the book when she meets her because she doesn't know her, but not because Yen is actually going to betray her, which is what the show is. Yen's only there to betray Ciri in the show, whereas in the book, she's there because Geralt asked her to come. I really don't understand it.
No, it's very strange. And Ciri has this dream in the books about the idea of Yen betraying her, and she wakes up to find Yen like sitting by her bedside watching her sleep, taking care of her. So it's like it's so dramatic in terms of kind of how different it is and how hard it is to believe that like the Yen we know from the books would ever do this, that I was distracted and sort of taken out of even some really cool moments of the episode because I was like, wait, why would this happen, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, 100%. And this is the main thing that we were thinking about all through the last two episodes, and even down to this, like, you know, psychic kind of connection that they had, that like then all of a sudden now she knows she's going to betray her, and then like she decides, no, it's not, she should run. It just feels like very out of place to what we know of the characters and who they are. I do love that it lands with them pretty much like we've spoken about, like as a family. Like, I do love that part of it, that like at the end of it, you're like, okay, they're there. But I have a real problem with Geralt's, like, I guess the place I have a real problem with is Geralt kind of like the whole, I don't forgive you, Yen, like really, really, really stings. It's like, wait, what do you mean you don't forgive her? Like, what are you even talking about? Like it with everything that dude literally used the djinn to connect them for life, like on against her will without her even knowing. And is like, yeah, I don't forgive you for like this. Like, what, bro? You're wilding. So I don't know. I just don't understand it. I don't understand that.
Yeah. It's so harsh. And it's, again, it's so, it just feels out of left field. And I was talking to a friend of mine who hasn't read the books or played the game, who was like, oh yeah. So she's his like toxic ex who he can't get rid of, right? And I was like, what? Because it's just so, you know, the relationship between the three of them is like so wholesome and familial that I was just like really struck that I think that's the impression a lot of people have from watching the show. Mm-hmm. And that just feels like bonkers to me. And yeah, I mean, she opens her veins for Ciri and he's like, I don't forgive you. Like, yeah. What?
That's
harsh.
That's rough.
You know, forgive Geralt. I don't forgive him. He let all his brothers die with dinosaurs coming out of a monolith. I don't forgive him. I'm still salty. I'm mad. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
I don't forgive him either. I don't forgive him for not taking advantage of this one night stand that didn't.
Oh, no, sorry.
No, I know that's a sore time.
Yeah.
That was, you know, my DMs were on fire from Sloan. She was like, what? Triss is terrible. How do you even
Right. We don't need to belabor what happens between Geralt and Triss at the beginning of Blood of Elves, but I will say, I think if you read through the first couple of chapters, you will be not wild about her conduct.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
But no, and I agree with you, Paul. I think the fact that we sort of land in the three of them going off together is encouraging, But mm-hmm. but yeah, it just has this feeling a little bit of like, why is there this commitment to kind of make their relationship feel dysfunctional?
Mm-hmm. I mean, she said it. She said, I mean, Lauren pretty much said it. And it was one of the things I remember early before season two was still shooting, and it was early in the pandemic. We were covering Atla, and we were all chatting about like some of the comments that she was making about, you know, their relationship. And we were concerned because we were like, wait, and I'm not saying it's a dunk on or dump on Lauren. I think she's done great work. Like, just to make it clear for the internets out there that want to give her a hard time. And she's been super responsive to the fan base, which as a creative, I think is really dope to be like, hey, I'm just going to be on Twitter answering all your questions, saying everything and interacting with you. George, take some notes. Can we just get you to like sit down and write? The point is, that I'm trying to make is that I really feel like she kind of decided early that there was going to be this conflict in their relationship. Like, she, I remember her saying something about like that she doesn't think that there are people who are destined to be together but should never be together or something like that. And I remember you chatting me, Sloan, and being like, what is, has she read the books? Like, what's going on? So, I mean, this is, I think it's just the story she wants to tell, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I thought it was, you know, the, as he says, I don't forgive you. You know, he also uses that quote that's from A Sword of Destiny about what Borch in dragon form said to them about, you know, destiny being insufficient. And in, I went back and looked at the section of Sword of Destiny that's from, and it turns out it's actually Yen reminds him of that and then sends him off to find Ciri. Like, that's how we get there, right? Is her saying, you know, destiny alone is not sufficient. And it's clear that Ciri is the something more that's going to bring them together. And so maybe we'll kind of head off in some more harmonious direction here. But it's a blessing, not a curse, I think, in the way that it plays out in the books. But here it looks a little more like Geralt's like, well, we're shackled to each other for the kid. And like, that's a weird vibe.
That is such a weird vibe, right? It's, I mean, we have like, hey, I'll just stay with you for the kids. We have grandparent overreach. We got like, we got so much stuff happening. We got freaking Taseya like slumming it. Like, what's going on this season? Like, I don't know why Taseya is hooking up with your boy. Like, I'm just done with that.
I'm sorry, whose boy?
It has to be somebody's boy. Somebody's got to claim it. Somebody's got to claim it. Oh, man. Well, what about Ciri? You want to talk about Ciri?
So before we jump on Ciri, I just want to come back to one more point that I think is important to keep in mind here, which is Lauren Hissrich kind of has said some things about the audience and what they expect that I think drive a lot of the changes here. And one question I think for us as part of that audience is, do we agree? Right. So while she was getting, I would say unfairly trolled on Twitter about an issue we'll talk about later, she says, you know, for most TV audiences, Geralt is a character for whom swords and adventure and bathtubs have become synonymous. And that the show, you know, wouldn't be as interesting if it didn't have all the appropriate ups and downs and cliffhangers and devastation that modern audiences expect. So, okay. But she sort of says this as a way of saying, I thought the plot of Blood of Elves was too contemplative and not fast enough. And so I had to make it different. Mm-hmm. And I think I said to both of you guys offline, like, well, my answer to that, if I ran the world, which I don't, thank God, was, you know, I would have done Blood of Elves in 4 episodes and done the first half of Time of Contempt in the next 4. Mm-hmm. And just given the stuff that's there, some space to breathe and be what it is, and then borrowed the hack and slash from the next section of the book.
Yeah.
You know, because I think, and I think people are attached to this world because of the characters. And so giving them a chance to breathe and not just be constantly hitting things, and even allowing them to occasionally be like content and happy for like 3 seconds at a time. Like, we would have been fine. We would have taken that as an audience, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I also think that what she said assumes a different type of audience. There's a lot of fantasy, and audiences are pretty sophisticated about their fantasy right now. So the folks who are watching this show, I think, would have been totally fine if it slowed down a bit. It doesn't, like, lots of Game of Thrones had no sword fights, no battles, no immediate danger. I think audiences are sophisticated enough that they're not just looking for, like, the sword fighting part of these stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agreed. I totally agree. That's like one of the biggest pet peeves. I don't think I've ever said on the pod, but Andrew and I have talked about this a bunch of times, that my biggest pet peeve with how they dealt with Game of Thrones wasn't even like the whole Dany meltdown. Like, I don't really like, listen, if you chop off my friend's head, I'm going to like murk you all. So that's just what it is. You like, so I wasn't even mad at her for that. But what my biggest pet peeve was like that I think they should have ended the pacing, right? They should have ended season 7 with the Night King and the battle at Winterfell so that we had a whole season to unravel the Dany plot. And if they would have just made that change, everyone would have accepted pretty much a lot of the other things. Like, there were a lot of misses, but that would have been the thing that could have changed all of it, similar to what you're saying about how she's kind of giving you cliff notes of things when it could have slowed down the pacing and just like not tried to do it all in 8 episodes the way she did it, splitting it up.
Right. Yeah. And just sort of pick and choose a little more about, mm-hmm, like, okay, well, if you don't think this part of the story has enough going on, like, we can just move through that more quickly and get to a part of the story that does, mm-hmm, instead, mm-hmm, of kind of this weird backfill of like, we did half the book and then we did half of some totally different story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, she sort of said this in, and this is a good lead into talking about Ciri, because she sort of said this as a way of explaining why we get also a very different Ciri story than what we have in the books. Because she talked about kind of the need to give the first half of the season a kind of propulsive mystery that she didn't feel like was there. So
yeah,
that's another kind of major change that we have here. Because in the books, there is some mystery to Ciri's story, but it's not the mystery that we get on the show.
You mean like the connection between Elder Blood and Witcher Mutagen? Like like the whole thing, like this whole concept, right? Like, it's weird. What happened there?
I don't know. This was the subject of a lot of frantic texting while Dave and I were watching this for the first time, because I was just like, what is happening? So in the book, you know, Yen and Triss know what Ciri is immediately, that she's a source, which is this kind of direct conduit of pure magic. And that's why she like can't do spells and she can't do witcher signs, but she can, you know, pull out her Ariana Grande pipes and bust a monolith for fun when she gets mad. It's because she can't actually control any of this stuff, right?
Her first single is Monolith, by the way. That's her first single. Ciri's first single, Monolith. Anyway.
Which is like up there with Toss a Coin on the list of, you know, great songs from this world.
Well, yeah. Definitely better than Burn,
oh, here we go.
Burn. Okay. Definitely better. No, I know that we have some fans that really disagree with that. So for you guys, I will say that Ciri's first single, Monolith, is climbing the charts, has not beat Burn, Butcher, Burn yet, but it's climbing.
Burn, Butcher, Burn is actually another like funny nod to one of the short stories that we didn't see. In one of the short stories in Sword of Destiny that isn't dramatized on the show, while Geralt is sleeping, Yaskir thinks about writing a song about their relationship and his unrequited love for him. So there are lots of reasons you should read Sword of Destiny, but one of them is that that's really funny.
Hilarious.
It's sad and tender, but it's also just incredibly funny. Mm-hmm. So in the books, again, we know kind of what Ciri is, but we don't know who she is and why does it matter. So her status as child of the Elder Blood and her political significance are things that we find out kind of over the course of the next 3 books, right? From Time of Contempt on, we don't get those this early, but we do know kind of what is she. And it's interesting that the show kind of downplays that piece, but we get this whole thing about Witcher Mutagen. And I agree with you guys that I think this is probably a tie-in to Blood Origin.
Mm.
But I think it took something that's already confusing and made it like fully bonkers in a way that I'm not really sure why we needed to do that.
I don't either. I mean, especially now the freaking Vesemir trying to like, just like, hey, let's see if this works out on like one of the most important people, if not the most important person in the whole continent. Let's just try this. You'll be our test subject. We're going to go ahead and make you the first Witcher in I don't know how long. And then you see, oh girl, her face burns off. And so like, probably not a good idea to just, like, do this with Ciri right off the jump. So
yeah, this is like not a great thing to mess around with. And you know, look, we don't know a lot about Vesemir at this point in the story on the show, other than that he's like fatherly and warm sometimes.
And stabs some girls that are possessed by demons. Sorry, I just said
yeah.
That.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing that happens. That feels, again, complete. And anyone, I think, you know, look, lots of people have read the books. 30 million people have played the video game. This is not like a small universe of people who are providing this backdrop that she's writing against. And so, you know, yes, the show gets to be its own thing, but when you're doing an adaptation, you are writing against people's expectations about how the world works. And the idea that Vesemir would ever do that, like, feels bananas to people who are, I think, familiar with the world from either of the other sources.
Yeah, agreed. I don't.
My husband yelled at the TV a little bit about that when he was just like, "What is he doing?"
I mean, he stabbed a kid. Like, it's crazy. Right. It's like, oh man, he went through all.
It's a mess.
I mean, he was like heartbroken about his boy Eskel turning into a tree man, and now he's like stabbed a little kid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. Oh man.
Yeah. No, it's really crazy. And again, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this is, again, what does it help accomplish? Right. And, you know, in Hastrich's view, it gave us something to do other than like watch Geralt learn to be a dad. Mm. And those of us who have adolescent children or have had adolescent children just get to feel annoyed that he's magically good at it and knows how to say all the right things despite having been a parent for 8 minutes, right?
Chicken soup for the Witcher soul, I'm telling you. He's got all those teenage books. He read them all. He's like, yeah, he has all the sage wisdom. When he says, you're ready enough, Ciri. I was like, man, you got there quick, bro. Like, good job.
I know. I did borrow that speech the other day, but you know.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, he's kind of instantly good at that part of it. And there was a piece on, I forget which website, a few weeks ago, right after the show came out, sort of saying that's one of the big changes they've made is that, like, other than a few moments where he's like talking to Roach about how frustrated that he is about, you know, what she's doing, Geralt is like instantly good at fathering on the show. In a way that he isn't really in the books. He's a little more lost. And in the books, we get to see him go to literally every woman he knows who might possibly be able to help him and ask for their advice, right? He goes to Nanika, he goes to Triss, he goes to Yen, like any female figure who might be able to help him becomes a source of assistance in his journey to kind of become a parent and in their journey to become a family together. And we don't get to see that in quite the same way here, which is interesting. And then the other thing about Ciri that's different is just all this stuff about monoliths. Like, I don't know what it is. And it's new for the show. And I assume it has to do with blood origin. Everything I learned about the conjunction of the spheres, I learned from the like intro cutscene to the video game. That ends up being most of what's relevant to it. But they've clearly decided to make that piece of the world bigger. So I guess that must be why we get this. But again, I think we have something that takes an already slightly confusing part of the story and makes it more confusing, not less.
Yeah, the monoliths, I thought at first that I was just ignorant because I hadn't seen anything about them except like, you know, game gives you little explanations about things or things that Geralt can read to learn about various things. I was shocked at how little there was about them because everybody was like, they're not that important. Part of me is excited about the monolith stuff because I do think this is a part of the world that could use some development. And I'm excited that there won't be those fan expectations that you can kind of just go into Blood Origin to see. But the another part of me is a little frustrated that so much of the plot was spent uncovering the mystery of the monoliths and what they are. It did give us the most awkward moment of the season, which was Yenna.
Yenna.
That scene was great. It was and great. I think I met another of your dear friends is like the new best divorced parent like comment that I've ever heard. Right?
He did say it with a little bit like too much emphasis on dear, which I found very amusing.
I just love that Yen kind of like shrugged, like she was like, "Okay, whatever, bro." Like, oh, so.
Yeah, we were on a break when that happened, so you know.
They didn't even know each other when that happened. Like, he was like, this is before, this is pre-Geralt. Like, this is like crazy to me. Like, I'm like, bro, like, what is going on with you? And Triss is mad shady. Like, we're just like setting the whole thing up. Oh, yeah, you should talk to Istrid. Like, he'll be able to help you out. Yeah, all right. I know what you're trying to do.
So, and the stuff with Istrid in that scene is a little bit of a nod to actually the story from which the unicorn emerges, right? Which is a shard of ice from Sword of Destiny, where Istrid kind of shows up. They're in this town. Geralt and Yen are living together, and Istrid shows up to try to kind of, I would say, assert what he believes to be his rights in the situation. Mm-hmm. And they have this very awkward back and forth where, you know, Istrid tells him he can't actually feel anything and that his feelings for Yen must be really illusory because like he's a mutant who doesn't have feelings. And Geralt's like, and no, I do. Thanks. But they have that same kind of weird territoriality. So even though we didn't get that story, which is both incredibly funny and intensely sad, I love that we got a nod to that, even though there's like no plot reason for Istrid to still be around at this point.
No.
In the story, they've made him a much more major character. Yeah. But I love that they did it in a way that kind of nodded.
Who's his barber? Who's his barber in the continent? Like, there ain't no black barbers in the continent. I'm sorry. Like, he got a crazy edge up. Like, that edge up is sick. I'm like, bro, you cutting your own hair? What's going on? He is a scientist.
Listen, Dara's hair got extremely long overnight when they locked it.
Did you see it? Like,
there must be a salon somewhere.
There is a salon somewhere. The hair growth formula that was on Dara was crazy. It was nuts. And speaking of growth, change, alterations, I don't know what to call it. It's really none of those things. It's like the murdery behavior of Francesca out of the blue. What's going on with it? Like, can we talk about the differences between Francesca, who kills children, and Francesca in the book?
Yeah, this part is wild too, right? This is another one of these just gigantic differences from what we see in the books. And I think this one is even weirder in some ways than giving Yen and Ciri kind of alternate backstory, right? Which is a little bit annoying, but like I can see where we go from there that will make sense. The elf story actually leaves out some parts of the story that end up being really important later. So I don't quite know what we're doing. So Francesca Findebear, who is the queen of the elves, is not actually the avenging angel of death in the books. She is a super powerful mage and she's a member of the High Council of the Brotherhood with Yen. So she's sort of far from kind of running one of these kind of roving camps of refugee / militant refugee elves. You know, she's part of kind of the mainstream of the continent's power structure, right? And she fights with Yen and Tisse and Triss and all of our other mage friends at Sodden. And much, much later in the books, she does form an alliance with Nilfgaard in exchange for power of her own. But this whole plot line about, and then there is some stuff, as you guys mentioned last week, in the books about elves not being able to have children or there not being very many young elves. But this thing about, you know, where she's suddenly Julianne Moore from Children of Men, having the like last possible elf on earth. You know, we got to see Philavandrel be like a cute dad and like harsh for him when she says, "I've never had a partner," by the way, like, ouch.
Yeah.
But we don't, this thing where she then decides to like go implement the 10th plague on the children of Redania is not something that comes out of anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why we're there. And what we don't get kind of critically from the books is the plot line about, and I don't know how to pronounce it in elder speech, the Squirtel or the Squirrels, mm-hmm. which are these elven commando units that go around the continent engaging in guerrilla warfare. And they're, you know, that's part of the backdrop of the military conflict of the show, but they end up being quite important later in the story and quite important to series arc later in the story.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of wondering where they're going to come from.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Interesting. I thought the same thing too, by the way, when she was like, I never had a partner. And I was just like, dang, what's going on here? Like I felt bad. Yeah. Philip Vandrell, he's been living in the mountains, getting beat up by Geralt, and the whole thing. It's weird. It's like it was. Yeah, well, Geralt didn't beat him up, but you know,
it's a rough life for him.
It's a rough life. Tough look. Yeah, no.
He's an adorable dad, but you know, and I think the show is like I mean, in general, I think the show is trying to make the politics make sense. And admittedly, the political world building in the books is like not abundantly clear and succinct. I think because he's trying to keep some things a mystery until later on, so it is a little confusing, but I'm not sure that like the way the show has picked to streamline it is helping, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I find the political stuff in the show, I think, more confusing than what was in Blood of Elves, because like it was clear to me what Dijkstra and Vizimir, like that, the motivations behind them trying to find Geralt in Blood of Elves makes sense to me. What was confusing to me in the show, I'm not clear why Redania is doing something different than the other Northern kingdoms. The relationships between the Northern kingdoms is not clear. Why is Foltis still on this show? What purpose does Foltis serve at this point? Also, how is his daughter doing? I'd like to check in on her. I guess I'm a little bit confused about like that last scene in season 6 where it's like Foltis, Maeve, a king I don't know who it is. What was the point of that other than to show that the Brotherhood was informing them? And I think it becomes even more murky because I'm not sure what the Brotherhood is going to do with this information. And I'm not sure why. It felt like Taseya was doing what Dijkstra did to her. She was taking this information about Ciri to the kings for reasons, but I'm not clear what the reasons were, which is what Dijkstra did about the baby elf. Like it's a lot of confusing stuff. And then also there's an owl that's also a woman. I didn't get it. Like, we'll just throw the owl reveal in there. I think it's very confusing, especially for people who didn't read the books, don't know the difference between Vesemir and Vizimir. Like, it's just very confusing.
Yeah.
As well.
I cannot imagine that anyone who had not either read the books or played the game, like, knew what was happening with Philippa at all.
No.
Like, I saw her the first time and screamed like, oh my God, that's who, you know, that's Philippa Eilhart flying into that window. And as great as Graham McTavish is when he's like having a drunken shirtless conversation with a barn owl, it doesn't make any sense to anyone. Right? It comes completely out of left field. And, you know, eventually the power struggles that are going on in the continent play out with the mages as well. And that's a central part of the story of Time of Contempt. And that's where I thought we were headed at the end of this season in one of my more spectacularly incorrect predictions. Was I thought we were getting to this kind of point where that comes to a head. But I don't know, and I assume we'll get there next season, but I don't know quite how those threads are going to start to become apparent. Because right now I think it looks like we have more factions on the show than we do in the books. You know, there's kind of more political stuff that's separate that I don't quite know why that is.
100%. So we're going to play a game. But before we do, called Big Deal or No Big Deal. It's like, big deal, no big deal. Who do we care? Do we not care? But before we do, let's talk a little bit about the future. Like, let's talk about, since you kind of hit on it a little bit just when you were just saying there, what do you think is going to play out in, you know, season 3 and moving forward? And how do you feel? Andrea, why don't you kick us off and tell us what you think? Like, what are you looking forward to?
I need more development between this family. So the episode 8 was called The Family or Family. And I guess I'm just not confident based on Yen and Geralt's relationship and how that's kind of been rolled out that we will definitely get like a full episode. I would like a full episode of Yen, Geralt, and Ciri being a family before, you know, politics are playing out, the Wild Hunt comes to get them, whatever. Like, I need to see some time spent together. I just don't think the show has spent enough time on Yen and Geralt's relationship. And then to add Ciri to the mix. And then, you know, we talked about how, like, Ciri's first experience with Yen is one of broken trust. And I watched this show because of Yen. Like, Yen is the reason that I was in on this show. Paul was originally the person who wanted to cover this show. I was very apprehensive. And then I saw Yen's character development and I really liked her. I get her. But I need to see the relationship develop more. So I'm hoping that will happen next season, not just with her and Ciri, but also with Geralt. Like, I want to see a family.
And now she's like beat every stage of the game and I can't leave Kaer Morhen. Like, so it's like, The Witcher 3.
Okay,
like,
calm down. There's so many quests that I have given up on, or so many like Witcher contracts. I am not really good at the game. I just have finished it a couple of times.
I'm not really good at the game. I've just finished it a couple of times. Like, this, not once. I'm joking. I love it. Finishing
is about persistence, not expertise.
It is.
How about you, Flo?
Yeah, so it's funny. I'm rereading Time Attempt now. And so one of the things we didn't talk about is Geralt and Yen actually don't meet up in Blood of Elves. The only direct interaction between them is that letter. And then Ciri basically parent traps the shit out of them in halfway through Time of Contempt. And then we get the reunion. So we're not going to get that beginning story because that kind of wouldn't make sense to do now. But I'm hoping that what we'll get, like Andrea says, is more of that kind of familial development between the two of them. And then particularly between Yen and Ciri. Because in the books, you know, not only is Geralt eventually pretty good at being a dad, like Yen is surprisingly good at helping Ciri understand both how to deal with magic and also like how to think about being a person. And I really want to see those together. Because we see, you know, and one of the things that's so weird is when Geralt's like, Yennefer doesn't understand balance. Well, like the back half of Blood of Elves is mostly Yen talking about balance with Ciri. So I want to see that sometime. And then I hope that we'll get, I mean, I want a ton more of Grant McTavish, like doing conniving stuff in the behind the scenes. Because I think, you know, Dijkstra is so much fun and gets up to all kinds of stuff. So I hope that we get, you know, a really, really well laid groundwork going into the political conflict that will set up the sort of middle part of Time of Contempt. Because there's sort of a climactic moment that I think if they don't lay the groundwork will be super confusing. So I hope we get kind of much more detail on the politics and the motives of the people involved.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I mean, do we get the Lodge of Sorcerers?
Someday we must.
I need the Lodge.
Yeah.
Like, but I need it sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Well, I want to see Frangilla. I really want to see Frangilla like turn like just totally. I want to see her. I just want to continue down the road of her redemption arc. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think like, you know, I really like this season. I was not a Franny fan in the first season. I was like, man, I'm out on her. This season changed my whole perspective on her. And I was just like, oh man, she has a depth that, you know, I felt it when she did the mannequin challenge. It was time for those guys to go. They were trash. It was time for them to leave. Like, and you know, she did what she had her own personal red wedding. Like, it was like Tywin needed like three other houses and like guards and all these, and like did it from a distance. She did it up close and personal and murked them all. And I was like, and then she kept somebody to tell the story. So I was happy with her. And I think I want to see how this plays out with her getting out of the prison, because she said she was never going back. And I have a feeling that she will not. So here goes our game.
We're going to play Big Deal or No Big Deal?
Big Deal or No Big Deal. So the internets have gone crazy about certain points of the show. They're online. They're in the Reddit subreddits. And all the kinds of things are happening in this world. So we want to talk about some of the things that we've been hearing out in the chatter and just say, Big Deal or No Big Deal. All right? So the Dooney reveal. It comes way, way later in the books, but there's all 28 million people who have played The Witcher 3 already know. Do we think this makes a difference? Big deal or no big deal that they reveal Dooney being the Emperor?
I say no big deal. Because I think this is it makes one part of the political story make a ton more sense, right? Because now we know what Nilfgaard's motivation is. So we still have all this murky stuff about all what's going on in the North, but we at least know what he's after.
Yep.
And so I think that's fine. I know some people were like very concerned, but I think it just like, it puts us in a better jumping off point for season 3.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Andrea. Istrid and Taseya are more major characters. Do you think it's than in the books? Big deal? No big deal? They're both good actors. What do we think?
It's a big deal to me because I love both of them with all my heart. Mostly Istrid is eye candy. But I love Taseya. I love the screen time she gets. I'm not crazy about her relationship choices, but I can say that about a lot of my favorite characters. I mean, it's no big deal to the plot. I think they get some work done in the show that, you know, all jokes aside, that needs to get done. Like Istrid did a lot of detective work this season, and it's important because he was able to give the elves information. It would have been hard to get them that information in another way. But I appreciate their bigger role, so I'm going to say it's a big deal in the positive sense.
I love it. I love it. All right. Vilgefortz. The show picks up earlier in the story, and he appears earlier than in the books. He isn't mentioned until a time of contempt, but this is really complicated because he's a character whose loyalties are shifting and unclear. There's another example of how he gets a little tricky when the show tries to expand backstories of a character. So here's the question. Sloan, big deal or no big deal that he's in it this early?
So I think this one actually is a big deal. Because I think he ends up being a super important character. Mm-hmm. And it's hard enough to understand what he wants when he first appears halfway through time of contempt. Mm-hmm. But now we have to have seen him want five different other things before then. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's quite confusing for people. And obviously some number of the people in the story that we have seen have some ties to him that have been not explained, that I don't know when those are going to get explained, mm-hmm. or if you want to go there. But I think bringing him in now, I think having him and Taseya have this bizarre sexual relationship, which PS, she's one of the oldest people in the universe. And he's not
a girl.
Yeah. And then that's like fine and good fun. But I think having him around and having him be sort of a player, a contender for a power structure that he's not already kind of fighting for in the books just makes the story a little more confusing.
And he's unhinged. He's like going off. He's like yelling and then getting all like passive aggressive. When will you ever see me the way I see you? And take off all your clothes, girl, sitting out at the windowsill like that. You got too much. Listen, she's wearing all that clothing because you're gross. All right. That's what's happening. You go away. Go away, Vilgefortz. We're not a fan.
And I will say, like, the Vilgefortz of the books would never describe a person with whom he was having sex of any gender or otherwise, as his partner or as someone that he considered, you know, an equal and an advisor. Like, no, 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 he's not that guy.
He's not that guy. Didn't he hit his head? How did The Rock lose? I thought The Rock was going to win. Like when he fell down that cliff, how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, right. So this problem goes back to the first season of like bringing him in. And then we get a hint in the battle that like something is messed up about him. But then this season he looks like a basically straightforward operator. And I'm like, what?
What happened?
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
It's super confusing. I think this is a huge deal. Like, I think this is the Will Perry problem, but bad. Let me put it to you this way. I think this is Boreal going to another world in episode one of his Dark Materials.
Like, what was the problem with that? I mean, he had cell phones, he had chicken wings and hot fries, he had a whole new wardrobe, he had minions over there, he was living in that palatial palace. Look at that spot he had. He was advisor to the Her Royal Highness.
It was shocking and not in a good way, because it was like the story unfolds, his Dark Material unfolds, and you learn that it's a multiverse, just like The Witcher. And it was just like, oh no, first episode, there's a multiverse. I think the Vilgefortz thing is really problematic, because I think people are going to forget what we saw at the end of season one. And so it will appear that if he turns, it's going to feel like it's coming out of nowhere. And then the writers are going to point and be like, no, we showed you that this guy was sketch in a single scene in episode 8 where also like all this other stuff was happening. I just feel like the finales of this show pack so much in that sometimes things get missed. I'm a person who has seen them both 4 or 5 times. So yeah, I remember that Vilgefortz did something weird in that battle, but I don't think that it's going to be, I think this is confusing. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's you're exactly right. It's one of those, like, I had to think about, wait, did they live? And yes, they did. But that was also 2 years ago, right? It's not only one moment in a super, super packed episode, but like that was in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds bonkers.
It does sound crazy. It does. It's like, whoa, unbelievable. That was mad long. It was mad long ago. Yep.
Yeah.
It was in the before times. So speaking of the before times, you know, there was a guy who back in the day in the books was, I guess, all the craze to some of the fellas on the internet. There's a lot of guys on the internet going after Lauren and just complaining about the Eskel situation, that he dies and that he turns into a tree. And I don't understand it. Big deal or no big deal?
No big deal.
No big deal. No big deal. None. It doesn't matter. Like he's not that big of a deal in the book. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think that the story moves on without Eskel, and it gave us something interesting. If they had to figure out a way to bring in the monoliths, he happened to be a good way to kind of like tie in. And no big deal for me.
Did we even like pour anything out for him? I don't even remember pouring some out for him. Like
we poured nothing. We did. I mean, not that he wouldn't have warranted it. Seems like a good guy, was decent. You know, they all seemed to like him. He was good in the books. I mean, he did what Geralt would not do, which was hit on Triss. I mean, like, this is just the reality. This is it. But it just, you know, it is what it is. Like, Eskel had to go. He was throwing like raucous parties, turning into a tree, got murdery at the end. It was time to go. He had to go.
Yeah. No, and it's one of these things. I think most of the people who are most upset at her on the internet about it are like game fans who are really like,
yeah,
he does some cool stuff in the game, right? During the siege of Kaer Morhen in Witcher 3, but it just doesn't matter here. And of course, like, you know, in the critical literature, would we call this a little bit of a fridging, right? Where like a character gets killed to enhance the character development of another character, right? Because it sets Geralt off on this path.
Yeah.
And is there some irony to, you know, who is complaining and who's getting fridged here? Like, sure. Yeah. But it doesn't matter.
Well done. And lastly, on our like little segment of big deal or no big deal, Yaskier, he's become a liberal crusader for elves' rights. But this seems totally in character. So, I mean, he is, but especially to game fans, where he fills a similar role in trying to rescue the mages from Novigrad. So do we think like these changes to how Yaskier gets down in the show versus kind of what he does in the books is a big deal? I personally don't.
Yeah, I think Andrea, you liked this one too. And I don't, this is totally fine. And yeah, any second that we get Joey Beatty on screen is a treasure, right? He's the exception to the maybe the Will Perry changes are not so great.
Yeah.
Right rule, which is just that like every time he's on the screen, it's fine. So if they want to keep inventing things for him to do, like that's fine with me.
I love that we have like a Will Perry problem has become like a way to describe something. This is making me happy. Go ahead, Andrea.
I was going to say, aside from the show, my game is the entry into this world. And in the game it tracks. He is one of the people in Novigrad who cares about the various magical races who are being hunted by the Northern Kingdoms, and it tracks with him helping the mages and being someone that is known amongst the magical population as being tolerant, at least. I don't know if I'd call him an ally, but so I think it's fine. It's not a big deal to me at all.
Yeah, you have to think, too, that some of that had to be motivated from season one, too, because, like, you know, he's there when Geralt and Philivandrel, like, run into each other, and that's where Toss a Coin comes out of that whole freaking situation. So he's, like, there's a big deal made in the books of Geralt's neutrality, but I think, like, Geralt in the books really explains how it's not really being neutral and why it's so important to really like invest in like these elder races not being wiped out because of decisions from the past and things that have happened and the way people. And I think that all that traveling with Geralt, it had to rub off on him in some way, even if he's pissed at Geralt at the moment for how he treated him. He can't have just lost all of that information. And you know, you get transformed through experiences and relationships and meeting people sometimes. And I think that I could definitely see that happening for Yaskier too.
Yeah, he's pretty bigoted in the episode with the Sylvan, where we first meet Philivandrel. So I think that this is showing some character growth for Yaskier over the course of time. And that episode does take place several years before the rest of the story does. So this works for me. I don't think it's a big deal. I did see a few people on Twitter making some noise, not noise, but like kind of grumbling about it, but I think it's fine. There's this whole discourse that's just happening in fantasy that I find deeply frustrating, which is that all of the things that people don't like, and by people, I mean particularly straight white men, that they're just calling making the story more woke. And that's the problem. If they don't like a plot line, it's because the story is too woke. We see it with Wheel of Time. There's already rumblings about it with the Lord of the Rings series. And so I just, fine. Yaskier is woke. He's an ally to elves. I'll take it. Whatever. It's not a big deal.
I definitely not a big deal.
Right.
Not a big deal. We like Yaskier. He has two very good hit singles and one that's kind of, you know, bubbling, fizzing out on the charts.
I just want to say, nobody at me with this Burn Butcher Burn slander, okay? This is a Paul thing only, really. I'm not trolling y'all. I'm just putting that out there.
Trolling actions. Like I don't even dislike Burn Butcher Burn that much. This is just me being an extreme troll. Like that's it. That's all I can do.
I will say there is one argument about Burn Butcher Burn, which is that like there actually is a song in this moment in the story that makes narrative sense, that like probably we should have gotten, which is that he's singing about Geralt and Ciri in a bar.
Right. And Yen, right? Yen's in that song.
Right. Yeah. And Yen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's sort of, he's singing about Yen and Geralt's love, which everybody in the entire continent knows that that's what he's singing about. And then he's singing about the lion cub of Syntra. And that's why he gets in trouble and gets captured.
They took that out. It just seems so random that he just knew, because they mentioned it and they changed the whole song out. You know what? This is why we're friends, because like literally you speaking, like you just translated exactly why I have a little bit of resentment about this song, because that part in the book is so tied in. And like there's a whole scene before that where the dwarves and other people from different are like talking about the song and talking about what the Witcher, and then they're talking about the stories that they heard of Yen from Sodden Hill and everything, like this legends that have been, and he sings this song in the bar. And even the way that the firefucker approaches him is different, right? Like it's sort of the same, but it's like kind of like he's already hooking up with these women, and like he's like, yo, okay, y'all leave. Let me talk to this guy, even though I don't normally, and he's like, I don't really do autographs. And he's like being Yaskier, like the celebrity, and then the guy tortures him. And it's kind of similar, but not exactly the same the way they framed it. And I don't know. Maybe that's why I have such a resentment towards the song, because I'm like, listen. That was a good, the way to describe the song that you're talking about is one that I hope that comes back. They put that into something moving forward, you know? So.
Yeah, no, I'd both love to hear it. And again, it would have made it make a little more sense here. And for those of you who I'm still trying to entice to read Blood of Elves, I will note this scene takes place in a whorehouse where, which Yen describes as a den of dubious delight and certain gonorrhea. When she comes in to rescue him.
Yes, exactly. It's fucking great. This
is
an
incredibly funny moment.
Oh, it's so good. It's
so
good.
I'm so glad we got part of it, but I wish we'd gotten the whole thing, because it is so funny.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. Well, that is going to do it, Sloan. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate, first, you know, like, you know, all of the help you've given us on the pod for information about the world and the pieces that you've written for us, and just joining. Thank you so much for joining and talking to everybody today, talking with us.
Yeah. Thank you guys
truly
so much for
delightful.
Having me.
Yes. And we'll be back. We're going to take a little bit of a break and then an announcement of what we'll be covering next. And we'll be back to cover more shows and interact with you all. So until next time, we'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone.